Welcome to episode 94 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the great escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Eric Nash.
Hey, glad to be
the Almost Famous Minute.
Yeah.
And Feels Like Weezer. Sorry about that. I need to take a quick breath and you jumped in there, but that's great. That still works. No problem. So welcome, Eric. Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a lot of fun so far.
Well, we still got two more days to record together. So we're good. So episode 94 begins with Hiltz continuing his, how do you call it? He's basically strutting to the cooler. He's not even walking. He's strutting along the way and goes all the way till we get to see Willie looking for Danny in the tunnel. As discussed yesterday, Hiltz got a first-class trip back to the Stalag Luft 3, and he quickly got frisked, and then he now is being sent to the cooler, and as he's going, he's walking by everyone, and as I mentioned yesterday, most people would call this a walk of shame, but he is doing it. He is very proud of the fact that he is on his way back to the cooler. He's done his job to try to get there.
Yeah, and I almost mentioned it last minute, but and we certainly get to see it by halfway through. I mean, he just he hardly spends any time thinking, it seems like, but he gets into bouncing his ball. But I think this is going to be a similar, again, back to Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah,
the easiest time he's ever done, possibly, because he's so satisfied that he has this information in his head now. I guess he's gonna divulge it soon, however the normal length of time that he would be in here for. I'm not sure what that is.
At the beginning they sent him for 20 days, but there's a debate whether he was let out early or not, because there was only 15 marks on the wall, so it's a question of whether he was let out or not. Don't know. I think when it comes to Hiltz, I think every time, all the time he does is easy time. He doesn't need to be listening to music, to opera music in order for him to have easy time. I think he always has easy time, whether he has his ball with him or not. Because, the first time that he was sent in, he has his mitten ball with him. The second time, he didn't.
Wow.
And he still came out. I mean, Ives cracked, but he didn't. And now this is the third time that he's going in, and as he's walking by, he gets his mitten ball thrown to him by Goff. Goff is basically his caddy.
Yeah.
I'm going to escape. I can't take my mitten ball with me. But if I happen to come back, make sure you throw it to me right before I get into the cooler. Now, what I love is when we get to see a shot of Strachwitz as he's walking behind Hiltz, you can once again see that he always has this book tucked into his jacket. It's his, I think someone called it at some point his yearbook, because it's the book that has the dossiers of all the different prisoners. It just looks so uncomfortable, walking around with that in your jacket, stuffed in there between two buttons.
Mm-hmm.
Not really sure how. I'm surprised it never falls out. That's what I'm curious about.
Yeah, you have to. If the book, for some reason, had been just a little bit bigger, would he have had to, adjust the buttons?
Maybe. Strachwitz's wife every night is changing the buttons.
Yeah.
Or, maybe he does it himself. he's an efficient German who knows how to do his own sewing of buttons. Right. So then, and Goff throws him very nonchalantly his glove and mitt. He must have been alerted that Hiltz is back. Like we discussed yesterday about the fact that how did the trio of the top Brits know that Hiltz is there? But this is even more baffling, that someone actually told Goff, and he had time to run in to the barracks or to get Hiltz's bag or whatever it is in order to pull out the ball and mitt. Or maybe he was actually just playing in the courtyard. He was playing with it, and he's like, oh crap, Hiltz is back. I got to give it back to him. I don't know. It's a hand-me-down. You never know. So Hiltz starts walking towards the gate right before the cooler, And then he looks back, acknowledging Goff, who has given him, thrown him his activity for the next 2-3 weeks or whatever he needs. Someone actually mentioned at one point that the ball would probably stop bouncing after a certain amount of time if you're bouncing it so hard against concrete, you know, for weeks at an end. I don't know enough about the physics of baseballs to be able to tell you whether it, you know, whether that would work or not. I don't know. Wow. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I certainly have never seen any indication. I mean, I've watched some of those how does this get made kind of TV shows, whatever those are called, quite a while ago. Used to watch that kind of thing sometimes. And yeah, I mean, I know I've seen the production of a baseball, essentially. But right. But that was probably more standard, usual, you know, more recent, and what they might have been, you know, however, you know, what I mean, it's supposed to be, you know, 75-ish years ago now, right. Probably. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah,
completely.
If that's possible.
Who knows? I thought you were actually going to say that you don't have experience throwing a ball in you know, constantly all day in a concrete room.
Yeah, not constantly all day, you know. Yeah. When I was a kid, sometimes bored, you know, a good hour or two, but.
Yeah. I think for me, it was, you know, as a kid, I would, you know, if I had to play catch by myself, I would throw, you know, a tennis ball as opposed to a baseball, because the baseball won't bounce back as well, you know, if you're throwing against the brick of the building or whatever it is. That's what I remember. You know, baseball, if you're playing with someone else, then you can have a catch, whatever. But I can't recall ever trying to throw a baseball against a wall expecting it to bounce back to me. You know, you sometimes would throw it up to try to catch it if you're playing by yourself. You know, you pretend that you're running for the fly ball or whatever it is. Right, so then the gate opens up. We get it's great how they give us now the inside view of the cooler. I mean, we've seen this before. But here first of all, we get to see that there are five different cells here, because we can see from the handles as you look down, you know, there's grates on the floor, I guess, so that, you know, when they wash the floors, they can just have the, you know, a place to put all the water, maybe. And there's one window directly in front of us, and then you can also see on the left-hand side that there are windows that are basically shining into each of the rooms in order to give the prisoners some light along the way. And then he basically walks in on his own. You know,
he doesn't get pushed in. I mean, so many other prison movies or what have you, you know, criminals will get thrown in, pushed in, you know.
Yeah. Here he's you know, this as I mentioned, you know, earlier this week, maybe this is where he knows he's bunking the night. So, you know, he's this is his favorite spot. This is the most comfortable place for Hiltz to sleep.
And then the other thing, the guard does have to unlock the door. I mean, is that, you know, would you think that's a standard prison policy to keep doors with no one in them locked like that, you know?
Yeah. It's a good point. I didn't even think about that fact, because, you know, you're not worried that someone's going to try and break in. The only person who's going to try and break in is if he forgot his ball. You know, that's all it comes down to. And I love the look that the guard gives him. The guard basically gives him a somewhat sympathetic look, basically saying, why are you doing this to yourself? You know, stop doing this. And then he closes the door of the cell. But he gives a long look. He lingers, watching Hiltz enter this, enter this cell. And Hiltz isn't fazed. You know, he still has a happy look on his face, a hopeful look. You know, he's like, all right. You know, now I'm gonna have to think of how I'm gonna try and get out next. You know, he's already, in his mind, he's already thinking about his next escape attempt, which is great to see. I mean, throughout this movie, as I mentioned, he is the beacon of hope, which is the last person you would think of to be the beacon of hope. And he constantly is able to keep the spirits of the other prisoners high, but also keep the spirits of the audience high by seeing the way that he's looking at things and acknowledging things. And then the guard looks at him from inside the doorway. Then he goes out and closes the door and locks it, and then looks through the window at him again. I mean, this guard, I guess, has gotten used to the fact that Hiltz is there. Very friendly, and he continues with his pitching skills throughout. Now, then the scene switches, and we actually get the payoff for what we were discussing earlier this week. I think it was on Tuesday, if I remember correctly. With, you know, we see Charles Bronson, Danny, once again continuing to dig, and we get to see how the dirt starts falling a little bit more than it did previously. I like the touch that we still see the tin on the side that we discussed earlier this week. You know, the supplies that they potentially use in order to create lamps. I could be wrong, but it actually looks shorter than it did the last time, which would indicate that they actually have used it.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yep.
At first glance.
Yeah, you know, and so this is a little giveaway. I didn't quite mention it. I was almost ready to back on Tuesday, but you know, from when it had that hard cut, there was like some extra wood that was wood 2x4s or whatever you want to call it. You know, probably something a little different than the 2x4s, but that was placed between, you know, in that little bit of time frame that I think the cut was supposed to represent. But so now they're back because it was just, you know, hey, we're just going to do this shot with Danny here, you know, and virtually the same spot. But yeah, let's go ahead and make it appear that some time has passed with, say the piece of pipe being shorter. Mm-hmm. But it's I'm awfully sure it's the same spot is the idea, you know.
It would make sense. Know. They're not going to, you know.
They don't expect anyone to analyze this to death like we do. Nobody ever
expects it. I wonder if filmmakers are aware that these things are happening and are starting to realize that they need to pay a little more attention to what they're doing because their movies might be scrutinized at some point.
Wow.
And have you ever heard any feedback of that? From filmmakers?
No, I mean, yeah, I know there's been at least a couple lucky few movies by minutes shows that have had discussions with the directors themselves, let alone anyone.
Yeah, I'm aware of a few also.
Richard Donner comes to mind, and
Richard Donner's been on the show
for the 5 minute at a time Superman.
Yeah. Ooh,
wow! I got to talk with him. Yeah.
Ooh, very cool. No, I just have a few months ago I had that interview with David McCullough from this movie that anyone can go back and listen to also. That was a bonus episode that I put out in August, my interview with him. He wasn't willing to do a full week of this
episode
because, you know, he said he doesn't know how to work Zoom or Skype. Thankfully, he was willing to discuss, you know, his experiences of filming the movie, so. Yeah, that's great. So if anyone hasn't listened to that yet, you can go back and try and find that episode, that bonus episode along the way. Danny then begins to hear a little more creaking and decides that it's about time to get out of there. Even in such a cramped space with someone who we find out later is claustrophobic, he's able to get out pretty quickly and pretty agilely, the way that he's able to do it. And I like the added touch how they have different pieces of wood falling along the way, meaning this isn't an isolated area that has decided to cave in. You know, it's that whole area that he's in right now.
Yeah, that's got to be a good like 12 feet stretch.
Not pleasant. Yeah, he does his best to try to get out by crawling out as quickly as possible. He isn't as successful as he would have liked to have been. You know, then he gets buried in dirt. And then, I again, it goes back to what we were saying earlier this week, that at this point we get a pitch dark screen. So that we get the feel for what Danny's going through. And this is even before we were even aware of the fact that he's claustrophobic. So that's even, you know, if you compound onto that, having the knowledge that he's claustrophobic, you know, as distraught as we might feel watching this happen, knowing that information makes it even worse. That, you know, not only is he in a small place, but he's being buried alive in dirt. Then we get a quick shot of Willie looking from the next way station, and he then calls out to to Danny, trying to, you know, make sure he's okay. He goes, Danny? And then the minute ends. We'll have to wait until tomorrow to find out.
And one thing for Danny, Charles Bronson, I mean, the shots here, at this point, I don't remember, like, I don't know if he was sleeveless before, but this is sleeveless now. I mean, those are some pretty good, you know, 1960s muscles, you know, I think, and you know, if you even take it back even further to to the 40s, you know,
he's got, yeah, the goods.
It's, you know, his future of being a, you know, a bigger action star is shining its, yes, light there, you know.
I mean, I actually love him in this movie. I think this is one of his best movies, one of his performances, because of the fact that we get to see how emotional and accurate he can be later on when we're dealing with the claustrophobia and stuff like that. So I think he shows in this movie a lot more range than most people are used to seeing with Charles Bronson, because you think of Charles Bronson as Death Wish, you know, just the guy who wants to go avenge his family. So you have anything else for this minute, Eric?
I think that's it.
All right. So why don't you once again tell people how they get in touch with you?
Yeah. So I'll mention the Feels Like Weezer podcast just a little bit more this time, I think. And they're both on Pantheon Podcast Network. So that's a song-by-song show. Somewhat in the vein of kind of the originators, much like Star Wars Minute is considered, by Pete and Alex and a couple of the other great guys that did Alphabetical. And we chose not to go alphabetically because Weezer is still putting out songs like crazy, especially earlier this year, or maybe last year, whenever you're listening to this one.
No, still this year.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, the two albums in the spring, essentially.
Wow.
Late winter, spring. but that's what the pandemic does to you. But yeah, so we're having so much fun going through that. Probably essentially like working on the Red album at this time as this comes out. These are the songs that we're going through right now, chronologically. So if you can listen to that.
Very cool. All right, cool. Yeah. And you can get in touch with us, sending us an email to thegreatminute@gmail.com. Our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. Our Facebook group is The Cooler, and our Twitter account is Great Escape MXM. So, Eric, you want to come back tomorrow to finish off the week?
Definitely, yeah.
All right. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. So, and hopefully all of our listeners will be back tomorrow, too. And until then, tally-ho!
Tally-ho!